Hey guys, great show for you today as Anthony DeMarco joins me to discuss SmackDown from this past Friday, when The Undertaker is going to retire, why the hell WWE hasn't just turned Roman Reigns heel, and just so much more. You're not going to want to miss this show. Lots of other great topics that we discuss. But first, just a couple of words from the sponsors of the show. Hey everyone. So there's a brand new podcast made by film students for anyone who loves film. They love to talk about films that inspire, film stories that break your heart, and talk to upcoming celebrities. You can follow them on Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Breaker at Film Newsies Podcast. You can also follow them on Instagram at Film Newsies. That's Film Newsies.
Have you heard about this yet? See Me Live's patented live video platform is doing its equity crowdfund fundraiser where small investors can now own a piece of the next big thing for less than $150. See Me Live's patented audience tool connects live video content creators to free audiences who crave their content that is based on subject matter. Like if you were into skydiving, when someone was going to jump out of an airplane, See Me Live will let you know just before they jump. And then after it's over, the viewers rate the broadcast, ensuring quality content and subject people are interested in. Audiences drive content versus content driving audiences. It's ingenious. Viewers get awesome content. Broadcasters get free audiences. It's a win-win deal, the best kind. See Me Live will be huge, and we have the patent. Do you know a good investment opportunity when you see it? Timing is everything, and right now, it's ground floor for a limited time. SeeMeLive.tv.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast. It is Sunday, December 8th, 2019. Thank you so much for joining me. And as I said at the top of the show, great, great show for you today because I have Anthony DeMarco with me. You may know him from a very regular recurring spot here on the show. Every 3 weeks, I have a rotating cast and Anthony joins me. He joined me earlier this week to discuss HBK versus John Cena that led to WrestleMania 23, of which I would highly recommend you check out that show. Very passionate on both of our ends. And very impactful and a very distinguished time in WWE because it really changed the course of the direction of the company and was symbolic in the direction of the company's change. So check that out. But today's all about SmackDown, and it's all about random tangents, as often happens in my shows. But no apologies there. It really, I think, lended itself to a great conversation as we discussed so many different topics of CM Punk. We discussed Undertaker, whether he's going to be retiring this year, maybe next year, if the Undertaker's stayed past his prime, of which I think you can guess that answer. We really have covered the gamut of wrestling and had a lot of praise for this past week. Of course, we dove into the rabbit hole of whether we think Roman Reigns should have turned heel, why he's not connecting with the audience on a large scale with the 18 to 34 male demographic. I'm not talking about the women and kids who continue to just blindly feed into whatever WWE puts in their mouths with Roman Reigns. But we really dive into so much different stuff, including the tag team division on SmackDown. A lot of praise there. Just again, I really recommend you guys just listen to this, sit back and enjoy yourself as we give you your wrestling fill for Sunday or Monday or whenever you're listening to this, as December continues onward here. Only a few weeks until Christmas for those that celebrate. So not far away. You got to do your shopping if you haven't. I know I wait till the last damn minute. That's just my personality, which is not a good thing. I know it's not a positive trait, but it is a trait. So Maybe I'll change that this year and do my shopping ahead of time. So lots of good stuff here, great stuff between Anthony and myself. And as you guys know, my schedule this week will be a Tuesday Raw review. Wednesday will be Nostalgia. Thursday and Friday are NXT and AEW. And then Saturday's back with my co-host. And Ashley joins me this week as we do our TLC pay-per-view preview prediction show. Really, really looking forward to that. She's an awesome guest. So that'll be a Saturday deal. And I'm traveling this week, so not that it's going to really matter for our schedule in terms of releasing shows, because I'll be in New York City Wednesday night, but I'll be in my hotel room bringing all of my audio equipment. So that will mean absolutely nothing for you, because again, it is all going to be the same in terms of scheduled release dates of shows. So, with all that said, guys, again, really just regular housekeeping stuff. Head on over to patreon.com/WWE podcast to get yourself a completely ad-free version of this show. And also head on over to the website at WWEpodcast.com for articles and blogs and all of these shows, all in one single place. So, really encourage you to do that as well. All right. Well, guys, that's pretty much it. That's it. I really hope that you enjoyed this conversation. I know I did. So, all right, we're going to take a quick break. But on the other side of that break, immediately following that break, is the conversation with Anthony. So you're going to want to stay right here.
Have you heard about this yet? See Me Live's patented live video platform is doing its equity crowdfund fundraiser, where small investors can now own a piece of the next big thing for less than $150. See Me Live's patented audience tool connects live video content creators to free audiences who crave their content that is based on subject matter. Like if you were into skydiving, when someone was going to jump out of an airplane, See Me Live will let you know just before they jump. And then after it's over, the viewers rate the broadcast, ensuring quality content and subject people are interested in. Audiences drive content versus content driving audiences. It's ingenious. Viewers get awesome content. Broadcasters get free audiences. It's a win-win deal, the best kind. See Me Live will be huge, and we have the patent. Do you know a good investment opportunity when you see it? Timing is everything, and right now, it's ground floor for a limited time. SeeMeLive.tv.
All right, everybody, welcome to the show. Right now, it is a very special night because I have with me Anthony DeMarco, and there's news coming out of the wire of some releases, and we're going to answer that question for you guys about CM Punk. Will he ever come back to the ring in an official capacity? So we're going to answer all those questions and your SmackDown review. I almost said SmackDown Live. That muscle reflex is not quite gone yet. So we're going to get to the SmackDown review also. So welcome back to the show, Anthony. And it's awesome to have you on twice this week.
Yeah, it's really exciting. Feels a bit weird, but like good to be back for the second time in the week. Really excited to do this.
Yeah, definitely. And I really enjoyed our last show. If you guys haven't checked it out, go check out the Wrestling Nostalgia, where we covered HBK versus John Cena and the build to it up to WrestleMania 23. That went, we always say an hour, and that one went a little bit longer, but with good reason. I mean, it was, I think it was, I don't know, an hour and 20, hour and 30 minutes, but it was a blast to do. And I would, you know, hey, anytime you want to come back on for Wrestling Nostalgia, it's one of my favorite shows to do every week as we dive back into the history of wrestling and what got us there. So that was definitely a show that I'd recommend everyone check out.
Yeah, I just think it really sets the tone going back into time, like, and it kind of lays the groundwork for where we are today. And obviously for me, I was like grew up in the telltale end of the Attitude era, and then like through the whole time of the Ruthless Aggression. And like we mentioned on that show, that match really closed the book for the Ruthless Aggression era. So yeah, I'd recommend it for anyone.
Definitely. Whether you're a new fan or you've been watching wrestling for 40 years, it's really for everybody, because whether you haven't seen it, you will become even more of a fan by seeing it and realize what pro wrestling can be at its top level. And if you are a grizzled veteran, then it's good to go back and relive those memories. So yeah, it is. It's for everyone. Today's all about SmackDown, but with some of the news coming down here that really within the last hour or two, of WWE making some releases, notably headlining that release, Luke Harper. So what are your thoughts on Luke Harper being released? Are you surprised at Luke Harper being released as opposed to the other two of Sin Cara and The Ascension?
Well, Luke Harper, I'm really not surprised. Extremely disappointed, but not surprised. It seemed like he's been trying to get out for the better part of a year now. You know, Harper was always that guy that when you saw them in the time of the Wyatt family, where you expected, like, okay, this guy is the dark horse almost of the company, that, like, he was good in the ring. He really embodied his character. In my mind, outshined Eric Rowan and even Braun Strowman at times as the henchman to Bray Wyatt. But they kind of gave him a push in 2016, early 2017, when he was on SmackDown in that angle with Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton. Never really pulled the trigger. Then he came back as the Bludgeon Brothers with Eric Rowan, which I really liked. I loved that tag team. Seemed like they were strapping the rocket ship to them. And then they went off television. I think one of them may have been hurt. And then they came back with Eric Rowan at the side of Daniel Bryan, and Luke Harper was never really heard from again. He had that brief return to help Eric Rowan in the feud against Bryan and Roman Reigns. But I think that Luke Harper is just a lot of untapped potential that WWE squandered. So while I'm extremely disappointed, I'm not surprised at all. And as for the other two, Sin Cara and The Ascension, obviously they haven't been heard from for quite a few years. I know Sin Cara had a couple matches on Raw lately, but no, not a surprise at all with those two.
I will echo that. I think, yeah, that's a good adjective to use with Luke Harper is disappointed. But yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone should be shocked. Yeah, Sin Cara and Ascension are, you know, two guys, especially The Ascension specifically, are, you know, they've kind of been forgotten. Sin Cara, as you mentioned, did have a match in the last month or so, but has been very publicly asking for his release. So to see him actually being granted his release is not too much of a surprise. And you know, his talents could definitely be used elsewhere. And there are other promotions out there. And look, Luke Harper is a perfect way, as I was going to say, disappointment is a perfect way to put it, because there is so much there that I think everybody sees, but for some reason WWE never saw it, or if they saw it, didn't feel that it was enough for them to push away or to the side of whoever they were pushing at the time to give the football to Harper and see what he can do with it. And I agree. I think that in the Bludgeon Brothers tag team, they somewhat reinvented themselves. Yeah, they were Harper and Rowan still, but they had kind of given themselves a level up, if you will. I mean, they felt more dangerous. They felt legitimate, and I really enjoyed that. And as you said, I can't remember who got hurt either, but that really put the nail in the coffin, so to speak, on his career in WWE. I don't even really consider his quote return over the last couple of months with the whole Roman Reigns angle and all that to be too much of a highlight of his career, although it was exciting to see him back. You just kept waiting. You kept waiting for WWE to say, hey, this is finally going to be the time. You know, you think it's going to be it. You think it's going to be it, and then it never is. But look, his talent is very high. His upside, his ceiling is very high. Do you ever see him possibly showing up in AEW? I think that's what the next step would be. And I think what most people are thinking about, oh, when's he going to AEW? Do you think that's a possibility, or maybe New Japan?
I don't see why not. Like, AEW is obviously the obvious choice. But, I mean, no matter where he ends up, I think that he's going to succeed. I think for a guy of his size, especially now that it seems like he lost a bit of weight, I think he'll be a great guy in the ring for his size and agile. And I think that obviously we haven't seen him outside of that particular character, but I always found that he played that character and invested himself 100% in there. And that was part of the draw, at least for me. So whether it's AEW or New Japan, I think that it's not a long time before we see Luke Harper surface again.
I hope not. I don't think it'll be long. I don't think he'll be searching for work very long. You know, he clearly got a lot of exposure on the biggest platform of professional wrestling in WWE over the last 7 years or however long he's been with WWE. And he's got a great look. His eyes are clearly his moneymaker. He has that just that look you can't teach. He just has that look, that faraway look that like no one's home. Or just he's zoned out. I mean, he knows it. I mean, they've put his eyes up on the Titantron as part of his entrance video, but it's true. His eyes are just, you don't see those very often. And that can be a big, big deal when you're trying to sell a story or create emotion. And so, yeah, I don't think it'll be long. Could it be AEW? Could it be New Japan? I honestly don't know, but I'm sure that people will be making phone calls or texting him, if not now already. I mean, news circulates at lightning pace now. So anyway, moving on down the line here, I do want to ask you about SmackDown. And we'll go a little bit more into detail of the segments, but do I dare ask, what are some of the big takeaways that you took from SmackDown that you'd like to address before we get into detail?
Well, one thing that I'd like to address that maybe is under the radar, but I really like what they're doing with the tag team division. I think that on the Raw side of things, the tag team titles have been kind of lost. Like, we've seen like almost for a month now that the Viking Raiders come out in an irrelevant segment and just, you know, crush some jobbers, which just seems really like unfortunate for the tag team champions to do. But on SmackDown, you know, the New Day are holding it, and then you see like the build towards the following storyline, where you had the Fatal 4-Way Elimination match with the Heavy Machinery and Shorty G and Ali and the Revival and Lucha House Party. And, you know, I just like to see the tag team division in the spotlight. And I feel like the SmackDown side of things is really investing time into it. It makes the belts feel important. So that's probably one of my biggest positive takeaways from the show. And I guess from the negative side is the Baron Corbin Roman Reigns angle. And not so much that I'm bullish on the storyline. I think it's fine enough. But it really bothers me that going back to the summer, they continue to showcase Roman Reigns and whatever storylines he's in over the world championship on the show at the time.
That is the argument I've made forever, that people, and I've said it with you, I think, earlier this week, that people say, well, they haven't had the belt on him. And I'm saying, but yeah, he's still in the main event. He's still in the final segment. That's the main event, which then sends the message to fans that WWE values Roman Reigns over the championship, period. And that's what's happening again. And so, yes, Roman Reigns in the final segment, we'll get to that, but was it a... It was a negative for me, but not in a maybe rant type of way. It was just kind of like, I mean, I'll get to my thoughts, but it was bad. It wasn't my favorite as far as the dog food and all that kind of stuff. I see what they were going for, and I actually have a few positive things to say about it. It wasn't my favorite, but yes, I think that is a under the radar item about the tag team division that kind of goes in waves with WWE. And in this case, SmackDown is riding the wave, whereas Raw is kind of, you know, putting the foot to the throat of the tag teams. And I like what SmackDown did here. I like that we had the Revival pick up the victory, and they then also made New Day aware that they are serious about this and to stop with their pancake-throwing, unicorn-loving garbage. And I love the way they said that, because it's so true that, you know, and I love how Dawson and Dash Wilder don't have to say, they do say that, you know, it's not about flips or whatever. They have a catchphrase. I can't think of it. But they say that we're old school. We're going back to what old school wrestling was, and you guys are disrespecting the championships. I loved that.
Yeah, I like the Revival. Like, they're not one of my favorite tag teams, but I don't think they're supposed to be. But they bring an old school feel where they really want to legitimize the division. So the tag team stuff on SmackDown, A+ across the board. And the Roman Reigns match, like, again, it seems like it's the same old story with Roman Reigns. It's like the match is great, but obviously him and Dolph were great in the ring. They're two veterans. Dolph Ziggler could have a match with a broomstick. And then I even like Baron Corbin. You know, I think he's really grown in this new type of character, you know, away from where he started in 2016. So it's nothing about that. It's more like the placement, because, again, it's like, why is it no matter what feud Roman Reigns is in, he has to close up the show and it has to be the most important thing? And I know they're kind of doing a slow burn with a Universal Championship, and we'll get to the whole Miz Daniel Bryan thing, which I really enjoyed, but it's, I want to feel like that's more important. And, like, granted, they ended last week's show with Daniel Bryan getting dragged under the ring, but it has to be, like, almost, you know, every day or every week, rather. Like, Seth Rollins is always the face leaving Raw for the most part when he was Universal Champion. And I don't know, it's just, it feels like no matter what storyline Roman Reigns is in, that's at the forefront. And I actually just hate the fact of championships, especially world titles, not feeling important or as important to just a bitter personal feud.
But that's the message WWE has sent time after time after time. And I, you know what? I wouldn't mind if this happened once in a while, but it's a consistent issue. That's the problem, is the consistency in which they have placed Roman Reigns on the card. And I, for me, it's, I mean, it's creating resentment from the Roman Reigns character as a babyface, but we all know how I feel about that character anyway, so that doesn't really help. But yes, they did it with Kofi. As much as you and I didn't like him as champion, it was about the championship and the respect for the championship, and they just continued throughout his entire, almost his entire run for 6 months, making it about Roman Reigns whodunit. It felt like that went on forever, right? So yeah, I'm all about placement. I'm all about championships. Yes, personal issue rivalries can be extremely successful, but 9 times out of 10, you need to focus on why the guys and gals are there, and that is to win championships and not to placate all the time to sometimes terrible storylines in terms of comedy, or making it all about the guy that you actually think it should be about, even though he doesn't have a belt in Roman Reigns. So, all right, well, let's get to the top of the SmackDown, because I definitely do want to get to The Miz and The Fiend. I enjoyed that as well. But at the beginning of the show, The Miz did come out. And it was the latest edition of The Miz TV. Starts talking about Daniel Bryan, how he doesn't like Brian, but he does care. I like how they addressed that little nugget there about how, hey, these two have had a feud all going back to all the way to talking smack with Daniel Bryan as GM, and we all thought Daniel Bryan was going to come back to face The Miz. And all the way, really, I mean, you could tie this all the way back to when Miz was Daniel Bryan's, quote, pro. I mean, but so they have a long, long history together, and I like how they're keeping it consistent that I don't like him, but I do care about the brand, and I like that. So we have Firefly Funhouse come on the screen and interrupted Miz. Wyatt told the Miz that he doesn't want to know what happened to Daniel Bryan and says Bryan could be with him. Then Wyatt says he doesn't think Bryan will be able to make it to TLC, so he invites the Miz to join him again at TLC. And Miz says it's not about him, it's about Daniel. And then his puppets start chiming in. Bray says his word, oh, the day is family. And we see a shot of the old Wyatt family. Interesting. I like how they brought back Daniel Bryan being a part of the Wyatt family in 2014, only to betray them, which is, I like how they brought that in. This is a reason for him attacking Bryan. I love it. And then Bray holds up a photo of Miz's family, and the Miz leaves the ring to head to the back. So we'll get to more, obviously. But what are your thoughts on the initial opening segment here?
Well, it's good to see The Miz in an actual storyline, because I feel like ever since his face turn against Shane leading up to last year's WrestleMania, he's been kind of fluttering away in obscurity, for lack of a better term. I mean, I actually kind of like the fact that they're going to hold off on, you know, the closure on the Daniel Bryan Bray Wyatt stuff, because I feel like it would have been a rush thing on something that could have been a slow burn and capped off in a way greater fashion down the line. I like the fact they're incorporating The Miz, like I just said, in an actual, like, meaningful storyline. I think they played very well. They paid homage to past feuds, which was cool, because a lot of the problems nowadays in WWE is that they make believe that stuff doesn't happen. So they played on the feud between The Miz and Daniel Bryan, and Daniel Bryan versus Bray Wyatt all, like, 5 years ago. So for the most part, I really liked it. I thought it was pretty cool. They intertwined a bunch of storylines, and that they're really getting The Miz back on track here.
Yes, that's the key. And The Miz is always going to be like that third, fourth, fifth guy that is never quite at the top of the babyface chart. And I'm okay with that. I don't think The Miz, and this is no knock on him, but I just don't ever see him reaching the top two spots of being that top lovable babyface. He can talk his ass off, but I don't think he just has it. I think maybe his lack of really good matches may be a piece of it. I don't know, but The Miz is a absolutely valuable piece. I just don't ever see him at the very, very top. So the fact that they're focusing on him again, and making him relevant after the really damaging Shane McMahon storyline, in which he actually ended up losing twice to Shane McMahon. Don't forget that. And I really think that this is going to reinvigorate his career. He has a program. He's not just this faux TV host that he has guests come in, and it's now the program that he's in. And I like that. I like that this is, as you mentioned, this with Daniel Bryan is not being just bam, all of a sudden it's a TLC, let's just get through it. They're clearly building for something here, and I like that, because I assumed, I was wrong, that it was going to be a match at TLC once Daniel Bryan accepted. And now it's The Miz. And now The Miz brings in, or the Fiend, Bray Wyatt, brings in the family of The Miz. That's another level that we haven't seen from The Fiend, and maybe one that is helpful in getting The Fiend actually booed versus these, hey, he's a new guy, we love him because he's so different and he's unique and he's a cool, creepy character.
Well, another thing that I found pretty cool about the whole segment is the later on segment where he gave Miz the sister to Abigail, is that he attacked him as Bray Wyatt. Yeah. And that was the first time we saw him be aggressive in any fashion outside of The Fiend, because even when Seth went back there and burned the Firefly Funhouse down, he was just really cowering and almost crying and like just really passive. So I think that's kind of an intertwining thing. And when they were advertising the match for TLC, they didn't say against The Fiend Bray Wyatt. It was just Bray Wyatt. So I don't know if that was on purpose, if we're supposed to believe now if he's going to come out as Bray Wyatt. Maybe that would be another inkling in the character. But that was one thing I kind of took away from it. And it could very well just be WWE not paying attention to detail, or it could be them trying to swerve us.
Well, that's me not paying attention to detail, because I see Bray Wyatt and I immediately think The Fiend, because we haven't seen the softer child show host version of Bray Wyatt actually have a match yet. So good pickup on the detail. I'm going to give WWE the benefit of the doubt and say that's done by design, because I think that with Bray Wyatt attacking The Miz as Bray Wyatt, that would translate into a Bray Wyatt versus The Miz match. I like how it's not for the Universal Championship. That also makes sense as far as I know. I checked on that. It doesn't look like it's for the championship, and nor should it be. Because I don't think The Miz has earned it. So I'm all for Bray Wyatt being the actual Bray Wyatt of the Firefly Funhouse. And it's going to be interesting to see also, how does the crowd react to that, just the Bray Wyatt character out of The Fiend dynamic? Like, how do the audience react to that? I mean, are they gonna boo him? Are they gonna kind of support him? Like, it's gonna be very interesting. And furthermore, do we see a transformation? I think we do, of Bray Wyatt transitioning into The Fiend maybe partway through the match, as you see his facials kind of change and, oh, he's going darker. I mean, I think you got to keep an eye on that, as he could transform into The Fiend maybe partway through that match.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty cool to see. And I hope it's by design for WWE standpoint. And your point about whether or not it's for the championship or not, I feel like ever since they went away from having general managers on each show, the whole thought process behind people getting championship matches is just whoever has a slight run-in with the champion at that time just gets a title opportunity. And I really miss the whole authority figure. And I don't mean that by the actual authority in Triple H and Steph, but in the sense that there has to be one guy running the show. There has to be one guy steering the ship. And in every workplace, there's a job. I'm not saying they have to be as involved as they have been in years past, but I remember growing up, Eric Bischoff was a crucial part to most storylines and making every title opportunity make sense. And this is another aspect where, is he going to get the title shot? Is it just a grudge match? I just think it's one aspect that's really lacking right now.
It is, and I think that a lack of authority figures has been a breath of fresh air. But in this case, it could have used an authority figure. And I'm on your side that while in general, I'm anti-authority figure being a constant figurehead and focus of every show. Eric Bischoff, I think, is the exception, because he's just so damn good. I mean, Eric Bischoff as general manager might be my favorite general manager of all time, was Eric Bischoff. Just such an awesome heel. I can't say enough about how good Eric Bischoff was as the Raw general manager. But outside of very rare exceptions, I don't need to see them every single week. But what I would like them to do is come in when it makes sense and when there's a big decision to be made. And how are we going to fix this problem? You know, not when you have two guys in the ring or three guys in the ring and it's a 3-on-1 situation, then two more guys come out and oh, suddenly it's 3-on-3 and then boom, we have a tag team match. Like, I don't need Teddy Long to come out and tell me that we're going to have a tag team match. The guys could figure it out themselves, and it happened. It's happened many of Raw since we haven't had the authority figure. So my point is, though, it can happen. And I'm fine with authority figures being established, but I don't need them being there every week, but being there and knowing they're looming over the show to maybe come in and make a decision when one is needing to be made, like this past week.
Need them to be as hands-on, like let's say in the days of 2013, where every single Monday Night Raw opened with Steph and Triple H walking out. And, like, the heart of the main storyline ran through them and their goons, whether it be Kane or Seth Rollins or Randy Orton or what have you. But just in the sense that, like, even if they show up once a month to, like, brief the upcoming pay-per-view or what have you. And, like, I know now they're big on, like, you know, Fox runs SmackDown and USA runs Raw. And, like, they showed that when they were doing the draft. But have a representative of each program, or even have like the real life executive directors, like Paul Heyman running Raw and Bruce Pritchard running SmackDown. Like, obviously that may not work because Paul Heyman's in the storyline with Brock, but just a figure that, you know, like to your point, that looms that may show up once or even once every 2 months, in the sense that, like, you know, who's actually running the show, and it's not always just assumed on by the superstars or told to us by the commentators. It would just be nice to know that the buck stops with somebody.
And it would make it feel like a big deal, like something big is happening when the authority figure is there. And that's what I miss when, you know, when Vince McMahon wasn't feuding with Stone Cold and he actually was kind of the babyface owner. When the authority figures, like the general manager of Raw, would go haywire and start abusing their power, you would have somebody higher than them show up, like Vince McMahon. You'd see him get out of the limo, and the crowd would actually lose their minds and go, something big's about to happen. Is he going to fire them? You know, what's about to happen? Is a title about to change hands? Is a title match about to happen? So authority figures can be good, I think, just in small doses, and I think that's fine with me if they establish Raw general manager and SmackDown general managers. I just think I think less is more, and you could use them as ways to make storylines change direction or start a whole new storyline to begin with. And it doesn't need to focus around them, but they're the ones who are in charge and can make these decisions. So they can be beneficial, but yeah, I think less is more. Okay, Mandy Rose was the Miz came back and he was on the phone with his wife. I actually like that. I was going to skip over that segment, but it was a really important point. It was a believable conversation with Maurice, and the Miz says that they don't know what Wyatt's capable of, and he's going to head home. So that's where we got with it. Any comment on that before we get to Mandy Rose and Alexa Bliss?
Oh, I just think that it was really well done with everything else in this storyline. It was just very well executed. I touched on it. I found it interesting that it was Bray Wyatt and not the Fiend who attacked him. But yeah, it was. I found it was a really well executed segment.
Absolutely. I mean, again, the believability, and everyone was all in. It wasn't kind of like wink and nod, and this is hokey. It was just well done by both guys. So yeah, Mandy Rose and Alexa Bliss. Alexa Bliss won this one. I think that was a good thing. She hit Twisted Bliss for the 3 count. It wasn't a kick out of a finisher, which is, to me, always a plus. And Mandy Rose continues to be defined down. And, you know, I don't know. At some point, they're going to come back to focus on her, and I'm sure she'll get her chance and her shot with the women's championship. But, you know, I think, number one, I think this is the right booking. I think Alexa Bliss winning needed to happen because she just came back. She just realigned herself with Nikki Cross, and really Mandy Rose is just this. I'm sorry, she's just kind of eye candy that WWE floats out there. I mean, look at the camera filter that they put on her when she comes out. You don't have Corey Graves drooling over her anymore because, hey, well, he's with Carmella. I don't know why. Who knows? But that's now gone by the wayside, thank God. But the camera angle and the camera lens they use with her just screams, back in the Attitude Era when the women were just kind of sexified. And they've done that same thing with Lana. So I'm not a fan of what they're doing with Mandy Rose because it feels very regressive with the women. But I think the right person won here in Alexa Bliss as she realigns herself with Nikki Cross.
Yeah, it feels like it's been almost ages since we saw Alexa Bliss in a singles match. And we really haven't seen her go full-blown babyface as a singles wrestler yet. Obviously, she's still coming out with Nikki Cross, and she made the save 2 weeks ago. But I think it's injury-related, but they still haven't really, gone full steam ahead with Alexa Bliss. So I'm really looking forward to it. Obviously, she's, a five-time women's champion between Raw and SmackDown. I think that there's a lot of potential there. I think that the SmackDown women's division needs her in a big way. Like, obviously, Becky and Charlotte are on Raw, and Becky and Bayley and Sasha are heels right now. So she could maybe be a babyface challenger closer to WrestleMania for Bayley. But I think it's just really important to get Alexa Bliss back on a legitimate track.
Yeah, they just haven't ever, you said, they haven't ever really strapped the rockets to her and go, okay, we're doing this, let's do this. They haven't, and I think that's a shame. But now she's in a tag team with Nikki, which, I think is working. And I don't think that many people thought it would work to the level that it is right now and the chemistry that they have on air. I think it's a credit to both women, and sometimes you catch lightning in a bottle, and I think that's the case here. They just seem to work, and I think that right now that they're okay in the women's tag team division, and God knows the women's tag team division needs tag teams, as the women's tag team champions, championships have gone all but forgotten, which is a damn shame. But I think having her with Nikki is a good in the right place, and I'm fine with, and while, yes, Alexa was in a singles match, I'm fine with her being defined as a tag team with Alexa, as the women's division needs this right now. They absolutely need this. So any other thoughts before we get to this next very interesting segment?
Well, I just think that it's important to establish Alexa as like a step above the rest of those class of women's wrestlers. I do hope eventually they put Mandy Rose on more of a serious track and away from the whole sexified gimmick. But I just think that in this particular instance, it was important that Alexa beat her cleanly and without her kicking out of Twisted Bliss or what have you.
Absolutely. I don't need anybody kicking out of finishers. I mean, I just don't. It's like the DDT that was a finisher. It's now a transition move. I mean, so anyway, I'm going to get on a rant. I feel it. So we get Dana Brooke backstage getting some food from catering, and Drake Maverick interrupts and asks if it's true that she's going on a date with Dave Bautista. And Drake says that he's happy for them, but he's feeling rejected because they had something last week, or at least he thought he did. Elias then interrupts and sings a song about Bautista and Drake, and then Drake hits Elias across the face and walks off. Eventually, this leads to a match between the Drake Maverick and Elias. And so I'll give my quick thoughts on it because I'm trying not to be negative. I like Elias returning. I think it was nice that he took time off. This is the benefits of time off. When you come back, even if you're a heel and you come back, it's almost as if you're instantaneously a babyface unless you give us another reason to hate you. And Elias, after his henchman as, part of Shane McMahon's trio with Drew McIntyre, he's, I think, washed himself of that. He's funny with his songs. I think he hit it on the nose with some of his comedy backstage. He's got that knack, I think, and that's a rare trait in pro wrestling, to have an actual knack for comedy, because typically they don't go well together. And the only thing I didn't like about this is Drake Maverick looking like a child, or booked to look like a child against Elias, standing there as, he holds his head, as Elias holds his head and he swings around like a cartoon and all that kind of stuff. I know what they're going for, but really, is really Elias defined as the babyface here? I mean, I don't know. This thing was not my favorite. What did you think?
It just seems like almost similar to the whole Rusev Lashley angle. I like the intent. It's just the execution that's poor. Like you said, everything you said about Elias is bang on. Breath of fresh air, change up his look a bit. in terms of like his shirts and what have you. Don't mind them mentioning the whole Dana Brooke Batista thing. They're trying to use Batista's star power. I can respect that, but it's just the whole delivery just seems very juvenile in my perspective. It's, I could do without it. I would like to see Elias in more of a serious role. If this is just him, them breaking him in with some, you know, quick comedy, I could respect it. I like the whole, like, the thought process behind it. I like that they're involving Elias. I like that they're involving Dana Brooke, trying to elevate them. It's just more of the execution in this particular instance.
Yeah, that's all it is. It's execution. This isn't the worst segment I've ever seen. I mean, in the worst segments list that I have in my head, this isn't even on like the top 20 or 30. It's just kind of like, I mean, I understand what they're going for. I understand that they're using Batista as name value to add a little bit of credibility to this. And I don't even know if it's actually true if Dana Brooke and Batista are going on a date. Maybe, or maybe it's part of the storyline. I wouldn't, you know, who knows? I don't know. Drake Maverick has been nothing more than a comedy act to begin with after he peed his pants from the Big Show back in the day when he was part of the AOP or whatever it was. And now he was involved in the whole 24/7 championship with R-Truth and, you know, trying to consummate his marriage, which I actually found pretty funny. And he was good in that role, which, you know, just kind of, I think, just used or ran its course. And now we're on to Drake Maverick, the adulterer who's trying to go around on, you know, as a camera's in his face, and the red light's on, knowing he's in a national audience trying to commit adultery and ask Dana Brooke out on a date, only to be completely humiliated by the bigger, stronger, you know, higher defined Elias. And it, I don't know. There's not a whole lot I can say about this, but it's nice to see Elias back. How about that?
Yeah, that's about it. It just seems like a lot of Vince McMahon cheap humor. Besides that, you know, there's not, it's like you said, it's not bad enough to like, that's worthy of it, us trashing on it and harping on it. It's just like, there's not much to dissect. It's pretty much what you get at face value. There's no, it's not going anywhere. It's not a storyline that has a lot of depth. It's just like, I think it's just a very transitional storyline for Elias and maybe even Dana Brooke to go on to bigger and better things.
Yep, that's all it is. And Dana Brooke's getting more airtime than she has. You know, she's gotten more airtime in the last 2 weeks than she has in like the last 2 months combined. So I'm fine with that. I think Dana Brooke is an underutilized talent. She's a little awkward on the mic. Maybe they just haven't found her voice yet. But boy, is she athletic. I mean, so hopefully they find something more legitimate for her other than just kind of being this woman who hangs out backstage and, you know, just is, you know, in these little scandalous outfits and just hang around and catering. I mean, I don't know. So, all right. Moving down the line here to a match that I loved. And this was the Fatal 4-Way Elimination Match between Ali and Shorty G, Heavy Machinery, The Revival, and Lucha House Party. Your thoughts?
Well, again, I kind of opened the show with it. I really enjoyed it. I liked them giving, you know, the tag team division a lot of time here. Try and build a storyline. Obviously, it ended with the Revival winning, which is probably the right decision to build off the existing rivalry with New Day. I think putting Shorty G and Ali together is the right move. I don't think either of them really have the legitimacy to their respective characters yet to go on a deep run as singles competitors. Lucha House Party, whatever. I kind of dislike them, but they can put on a fine match. And I really like Heavy Machinery, but they're not quite ready for prime time. So all in all, I really liked the match. It was entertaining. I liked the length of the match, and I really liked the guys that they chose as the winners.
Yes, and I was actually surprised about the winners. I thought it would be Shorty G and Ali, and we would have a babyface versus babyface. And Heavy Machinery is also kind of being defined down by Vince McMahon, who looks at Otis as nothing more than a comedy act that wears, you know, shirts that are half his size to just accentuate his belly. Because Vince McMahon gets a chuckle about how big, you know, Otis's stomach is, and so they just decide to make him a comedy character when this is a legitimate badass tag team, and we saw it in NXT, and yet Vince McMahon takes it and just goes, ha, 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 look at that bowl of jelly, and it's just unfortunate. But hopefully, you know, Vince will grow out of that, and we will see Heavy Machinery at some point actually, you know, be taken more serious. And, I'm fine with them not having the belts for the next 6 to 8 months. I mean, I'm fine with them having a slow build. Right now, they're a comedy act, which is again, a bit disappointing. But the Revival winning, I think, is a good thing. I think the Revival need a little bit more time to develop their characters. I think they need more time in the mic. And this was a step in the right direction this past week about what they stand for and reminding the audience what they stand for about an old school style of wrestling. And when they see the New Day, they are the antithesis of the New Day. I loved that as we opened the show with that. Having the New Day on commentary, it's, you know, it is what it is. And they have their own podcast now, which they like to plug with Corey Graves. And all of that's fine, but you know how you and I feel the same way about the pancake throwing and all that nonsensical garbage. So it was just nice to see Dash and Wilder come out and say, hey, this is not what we stand for. We are about pro wrestling, the old school.
Yeah, Matt, if I could just ask you real quick, because I know I wanted to ask you this and you kind of touched on it. Were you contacted to change, like, the image and slogan of your podcast by WWE?
Yes, I was. Why? Did you have somebody else that you knew that had to change it as well?
Not so much, but I just realized that on your logo, it was on top of the new logo, it says unofficial. Mm-hmm. And you took out WWE's logo and you put the red one in. And now when I see WWE advertise the Corey Graves podcast or the New Day podcast, they say an official WWE podcast.
Yeah, they sent me along with a bunch of other podcasts. I wasn't the only one. There were several other out there, of which I won't name to give free advertising, but there were several that still use the logo. They must have done like a mass email to whoever had podcasts out there, because the legal team probably got notice of, hey, look, we have official podcasts coming down the line. We're doing, you know, Corey Graves, and we're going to do the New Day, and, you know, on and on. I'm sure they have more coming down the line as WWE gets into this exploding market, and rightfully so, and smart on their part. But yeah, they must have sent an email and they said, you know, you can't be losing this logo, just like some, you know, legalese stuff that said you have one business day to change this. I was like, oh crap. Like, I mean, yeah, they gave you like no time to change it because they were about to drop their shows, which, yeah, I mean, you put two and two together. That's what happened.
All right. Well, I mean, that's pretty cool. No, like, I mean, for you, like, it means that you're recognized and, you know, it's pretty cool for the whole platform as is.
Yeah. No, it is. I just wish the letter that was sent wasn't the legal threats. It was more of just like, hey, great job on the show. You know, thanks for advertising for us. It was like, hey, we're going to take legal action if you don't change this. But yeah, I mean, nonetheless, it was still from WWE officially. So yeah, that's the reason for it. And you know, many other. You won't find, if you find another show that's not WWE actual official that has a WWE logo, then they're probably going to be contacted very shortly. I mean, you just don't see them out there anymore. All of them changed like overnight. Everyone like crapped their pants and said, you know, that WWE is going to take legal action, which, right, you know, rightfully so. It's their trademark. It's their logo. And, you know, I wasn't trying to get away with anything, but I said, hey, why wouldn't I use the WWE logo to do this show, because it's the WWE podcast? And, you know, I thought about it. Sooner or later, they might contact me, and they did. And, you know, look, they own the trademark. They own the logo. I don't blame them.
Well, okay, that's pretty. Just wanted to ask that, and it just popped in my mind as you were talking there. But to get back on track here, with the Revival, like, they were a tag team, and I believe I mentioned this before, where, like, a lot of my, like, NXT marks said, like, oh, these guys are for real. They're old school. They're a legit tag team. And I've never really connected with them. I like them, and I like it when they're champions because they are a legit tag team. But to your point, I don't really know what they're all about. They've kind of put more effort into building them up since they aligned with Randy Orton and since they switched to SmackDown. I still find Scott Dawson kind of awkward, like just the way he talks and his facial expressions. Like, I still find him kind of an oddball, but maybe that's his thing, and if so, it's working. But as a whole, they're trending in the right direction, making me want to care and legitimately hate them, as opposed to early on, I just didn't really get who they were, and I didn't care whether or not they were on TV or not. And it seemed as though, like, they were legitimately threatening of leaving the company, and that kind of scared WWE and re-upped them and, you know, got them more into a legitimate storyline, which they have for the better part of a year.
No, I think it just boils down to simple. Simple answer here is they just need character development. They have had next to none, and, you know, they're on the mic once every couple of months, and that doesn't help anybody, you know, move forward. So they just need maybe a vignette, maybe a video package, maybe a sit-down interview, maybe just a history of what they do, what they stand for. And again, it was nice to see a little bit of that this week about what they stand for and their values and their mission. That's what we need, because otherwise they're very generic. I mean, you could look at these guys and you go, yeah, they're probably wrestlers, but they don't excite you because of their look. They're just kind of like generic at wrestler A and wrestler B, but with character development and over time could really help this team. So I'm hopeful that they win the championships at TLC. I'm not too confident. So, all right. Then we get a Lacey Evans and Haley Jones match. Not much to say about this match because it wasn't really about the match after Lacey Evans ended up winning that match. But it was all about Sasha Banks coming out and telling Lacey to stay in the ring because they have to business to take care of. Sasha gets on the apron and cuts a promo, and Lacey has heard enough, says she's sick of Sasha and Bayley's excuses for their failures, and then talks about, and what I really liked here was Lacey Evans' promo. This might have been her most babyface promo to date, if not her best promo to date, because it felt more real. As Sasha brought up her daughter that's a brat, Lacey, you know, said, "Don't you ever speak of my family again," and then brought up how she's a former United States Marine, of which we all knew, but she never brought it on air. And you don't bring it on air as a heel. You bring it on air as a babyface, and that's the right time to do it. So I think this was well executed by Lacey Evans. I think it's a match. I'm looking forward to this match. And you got the heat on Bayley after she ambushed Lacey Evans from behind up the ramp, which I didn't see coming. I thought there was going to be a from behind in the ring, and they waited to the last second, which I think was a nice little swerve there. It wasn't very predictable. So Sasha joined Bayley as they leave. I don't know. I thought this was a thumbs up segment. What about you?
Yeah, I liked Lacey Evans ever since she's debuted in WWE back in the spring. I think that she's way more natural as a babyface. I think that, like you said, it felt like a very organic and believable promo that she gave. I feel like that she's the perfect stature to challenge these, like Bayley. You know, she's a different look. She's built. She's tall, kind of a Charlotte Flair-esque thing, or esque look, I would say. And I just think that the only negative I would draw away from is that I'm kind of sick of seeing Sasha as Bayley's lackey. I feel like she had such a incredible return where she had a bunch of heat on her, and it's just really died in the cradle ever since they just strapped her to Bayley's side.
Oh yeah, no, there's no question about that. And I have just unfortunately just come to the realization that that is the reality of what they've done. And I'm 100% on board for what you just said, that this has been a kind of a flop of a heel turn for both women. I mean, really for both. I mean, you turned Bayley, the beloved Bayley, heel, and she got a nice little bit of heat back as she attacks Lacey Evans from behind. But I feel like they're really, really underutilizing what could be with these two. As you said, kind of, I don't need either one being a lackey to the other. I'm fine with them as a team, as heels, but I need them to do more. I need them to be featured more prominently as heels, because I don't think they realize what they've done turning both of them heel, of the potential. And the fact that you've turned Bayley, look at what Bayley was in NXT. What they've done, you have to capitalize and maximize on that decision, and they just haven't. So, yeah, that could be the one negative takeaway here.
Yeah, and it's just it seems like the SmackDown division on the women's side kind of took a hit in the brand split, or the latest rendition of it, because I thought that they were going to split Bayley and Sasha, and they didn't, and I feared what may happen has happened, and now you just have Sasha as her henchman, but yet saying that she's the face of the women's division, which is kind of ironic. And it's just Bayley, I feel like you don't really know what she's about. It's more like Sasha's her mouthpiece, and I just feel like it was a missed opportunity here. And I still like both heel turns. I like the program with Lacey Evans. I like Bayley in the ring. But I just feel like that Bayley's heel turn has been thrown by the wayside because it's been coupled and jumbled with and attached by the hip with Sasha Banks's.
That's just, maybe that's what it is that it's too close of a turn for where it kind of washed the other one out, and then it never allowed the one to breathe, and the other one just got suffocated by it, and then they just put them together, and then they didn't do a whole lot with them. Sasha's turn was brilliantly done. Bailey's was very good as well. She comes on the mic and, you know, starts cursing at the people, and she cut her hair, thank God, and got darker colors, which is what I said. And but the problem is, the whole key, the whole problem we have with all of this is follow-up. And that has been a problem and an Achilles heel for WWE Creative for as long as I can remember. They just do things, even if they're dramatic. And yes, they have initial shock value, but they don't follow up. The follow-up is almost more as important, or maybe more than what they have done to do that 180. And that is the whole key here. So I still think there's time to make this a success and make it as big as it could be. But I'm starting to lose confidence in WWE Creative to take what they've done and maximize Bayley and Sasha, or maybe even string them off together. I don't need them facing one another. God knows we don't need that. But maybe even if they're not a team, just to have them off on their own doing nasty things. I don't know. I'm losing a little bit of faith in Creative, but they have failed to follow up, and that's the key.
Yeah, and it's important to point out that, you know, we have to give them credit for turning both of these women heel, and it was brilliantly done, respectively. But it's like, I thought they were going to split Charlotte and Becky at the brand split, and I thought they were going to split Bayley and Sasha, and they didn't. They put each of the two respectively together. And each pair desperately needed a split, and you still see Becky teaming with Charlotte, and ditto for Bayley and Sasha, and I feel like it's just hurting the characters that these four respective women have really invested a lot into, and they all have kind of a breath of fresh air. Maybe not so much Becky, but Bayley and Sasha are fresh into their latest heel turn. Ditto for Charlotte, but on the babyface side of things. And I just feel like the fact that they can't breathe and not be sent off on their own has really hurt their characters.
It has. It has. Again, I don't think it's the worst turn in history of follow-up. I mean, I'd give it so far like a C-. I mean, if you were going to give me a grade, it would be like barely passing as in terms of follow-up. Maybe that's being generous too, but yeah, there's still a lot there. The thing is, there is so much gas in the tank for what they could do with them and be nasty and vile and call out the fans and tear down the baby face. I mean, they just don't do it. And, you know, having Sasha be a Bayley's lackey or whatever, I don't need it. So, okay. But anyway, moving on the line here, it's, you know, one thing I will say before we move on about the Miz and Bray Wyatt, as we just gave it all the praise, and it is well deserved. And this is of no fault of the Miz and or Bray Wyatt. It is just the constant lack of thought, or not even lack of thought. Maybe the fans don't care or nobody notices. Is the camera angles of WWE just continue to amaze me of how conveniently placed they are, and when they get shot to live feed of Bray Wyatt's room being positioned with a stationary camera as the Miz walks in. I mean, these are the things that I notice, because these are the things that take me out of the moment when it happens. And, you know, it wasn't a fatal error. You know, it wasn't like Shane McMahon, you know, putting his head through a car, you know, as he's facing AJ Styles a couple of weeks before WrestleMania, where there's a car inside the vehicle, that kind of thing, or having cameras conveniently located where Roman Reigns got attacked. But it's, again, one of those things that's like, really, like, is there really a camera in there so you can get the front facial reaction of The Miz as he comes in, and it just happens to go live on the air as he comes in? So I don't know. Maybe I'm nitpicking, but it's those little things in production that make and are so easily fixable that WWE just can't help themselves when it comes to trying to get the best angle, when actually the best angle is taking away from it. It's kind of ironic the way that works.
Well, you just brought up, it's just overproduction, and that's what it is. They're trying to get the perfect like shot and the perfect picture of each scene, and in reality, it's just taking away the authenticity from it. And it's just stuff, little things that maybe are only caught by like longer fans like you and myself, that we say like, oh, for God's sakes, like I want to make it believable, and I want it to be believable for me to get drawn in. And they're trying so hard to make it like a simulated sport, and that's what kind of ties into like actual sports and the GM thing. And not to go back on that, but just a quick thing on it is like, even in real life sports, like football and baseball and basketball, every once in a while, you see the general manager come out, and it's not always, but when he does once a month or so, you know it's legitimate. It's a big thing for the respective team and organization. And it's the same instance here in WWE, and in this particular thing about the camera shots, is like, how am I supposed to believe that he's in a place where he shouldn't be, but there's a perfectly set up camera on a tripod?
I don't even know what to say about it. And clearly they don't care because they keep doing it. And even when you have wrestlers backstage talking with each other, they aren't looking at each other. They're angled at the camera. Is that how you talk to somebody? I mean, things like that that are happening every single time that somebody's backstage, it's just things like that just don't make sense. I mean, I don't talk to somebody standing perpendicular to them. I stand looking at them when I'm speaking with them. And you just don't have that with wrestling. And they may say, well, you're not going to get the shot of how you're not going to know what they're saying. Yeah, you will. You have mics that pick up on anything. I mean, you could have cameras there that it will make it feel more authentic if you don't have them standing perfectly in a single file so that the camera can get the entire shot of everyone that's there. It's just, as you said, it comes down to overproduction. And that has been verified by CM Punk, who said it on WWE Backstage that everything's overproduced. You had John Moxley say it in his infamous interview on the Chris Jericho podcast. So these aren't things that just, you know, the two fans sitting out here talking. No, this is things that, I don't know, it just takes me out of the moment. But, all right, well, let's get to this main event here. And I will say one thing about Roman Reigns' promo before this match. He had a match or a promo. I don't know who the interviewer was. Might have been Charlie Caruso or I can't remember for the life of me. But he said that Corbin's bigger than him and stronger than him, but he can't keep up with him in the ring, and he's going to embarrass Corbin. So Roman Reigns isn't the best on the mic. We all know that. That's never been his strong suit. He's always been fantastic in the ring. But this was kind of a head-scratching comment. Is Corbin really bigger and stronger than Roman Reigns? I mean, maybe height-wise, he's got a few inches on Roman, and maybe that's what he was getting at. But stronger? Really? I don't know. So what did you catch that?
You know, I get what they're trying to do. And I think it's more like we kind of touched on it in our show on Wednesday where we said we never really think that Corbin has a chance against Roman Reigns. So maybe this is one of their ways of trying to say like, oh, yeah, Corbin is taller and he is bigger. And like you said, by pure stature and height, yeah, he is. But look at the physiques. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to look at them and say, you know, if anything, at the very least, they're on equal footing with one another. I just find everything with Roman doesn't get delivered authentically and originally. And I feel bad because I really do want to like him. And I kind of just had a joking argument with my girlfriend and we were talking about Roman Reigns. And she and I said, you know, like, I really do like him. And she said, no, you don't. All you do is complain about him. And I said, well, yeah, but it's not his fault. It's like it's almost like everything they do production and script wise is doomed for him to fail. And I said it on Wednesday. It seems like everything he says he does when he comes out, how Michael Cole calls his name, is that it's one big massive troll by Vince McMahon. And obviously that's not the case, but it reigns true here as well that it's just like you can't really take anything he says seriously.
You can't. And we have yet to ever hear, I can't ever remember ever hearing a go-home promo that really is an essential skill that you have to be a top babyface. I mean, it's essential that you have to have a-plus go-home promo at some point in your career, if not, you know, ideally for every pay-per-view, but that's not realistic unless you're The Rock or Stone Cold or, you know, anybody in the golden eras of the Attitude Era. But Roman Reigns has yet to ever cut, even to me, like an A- or B+ promo. He doesn't have it in him. And like, look, I'm not claiming to say promos are easy. They're hard as hell. I don't have any kind of disrespect for the lack of skill that he has because I would probably be in that same boat. That's, you know, but it comes down to the fact that everything he says, while he's improved, certainly since he, you know, was in the Shield and just said a couple of words and his weaknesses were able to be hidden in the Shield. But he's certainly improved. He's nowhere near where he probably should be considering the position WWE's put him in. I mean, I don't know how anybody feels anything with Roman Reigns promos. They are just so mechanical or too cool for school, laid back. There's just never anything that makes me feel anything in my stomach for him outside of the awesome, you know, I'm sure he is. He's an awesome guy outside the ring, a great family man, amazing in the ring. He can make anybody look good. He can have great matches, all of that. And it's not always about having great matches. It's about talking people into the seats. That's how the money comes. That's where the money's at. It's not just about cool moves and five-star matches. Talk people into the seats. And Roman Reigns simply doesn't have that skill. I mean, it's just a fact.
Well, it's like, and it's not even fair at this point. Some of the times I criticize him, like his music hits, he comes and I look at my girlfriend. And I said, isn't just his, like, the start of his theme song, like a Debbie Downer? Like, I don't know, and I like the theme song in terms of the Shield, but it's like he comes out, Michael Cole's reaction, the like lukewarm reaction of the crowd, like they're forced to cheer from him, aside from the women and the younger demographic, and it's just like, it's like the whole ambiance around him, it almost seems like there's been too much damage for him to be rectified in this particular character, because he's never changed. Even going back to the Shield, he still wears the same gear. He does the same fit moves. He acts the same way. He wears the same he uses the same song. Like, it's just, I want to like him, but it's like the management and the creative gives me no reason to do like him. And it's really tough because I don't want to be one of those guys who just goes against whoever WWE tries to push. I really try and watch with an open mind and not just try and be like a guy who gets off on going against whoever WWE picks as the new face, like we touched on in the last show. But with Roman Reigns, it's just like you keep going back to the well over and over and over again. And then you see in the drop-down handle on SmackDown, one of his claims to fame is headlining four straight WrestleManias. And it's just like, I just can't get there with him.
It's so ironic that they do that, because every single one of those main events, he was booed out of the building. And I was part of that, particularly at WrestleMania 33 with The Undertaker, booing him out of the building and then having him on Raw the next night with the crowd actually cursing at him, F-words, all that. That was that made me smile, and I still watch it. But if I'm having a bad day, I will watch that 10-minute intro to Raw. It's just brilliant. But, yeah, he can say he headlined four WrestleManias. But that's not because of the fans' support. It's in spite of the fans' support and simply forced by management that he actually was in those spots at WrestleMania. I mean, you can hear, I mean, particularly look at the Triple H and Roman Reigns main event that went on way too long. The fans rejected it from the beginning. We all knew Roman Reigns was going to win, and it was just an outright disaster with Triple H. You go to the Brock Lesnar one that he had at WrestleMania 31. It was all about Seth Rollins' cash-in. The crowd was booing Roman Reigns out of the building. I mean, you can go down the list here. I mean, so having Roman Reigns claim to fame of four WrestleManias it doesn't hold any water with me, because it wasn't because of the fans. It was in spite of them.
And it's too bad, because even a lot of those WrestleManias where, and again, like I think back to the old times, like Rock versus Austin, building the storylines, or Cena fighting against HBK and whatnot. I even feel like the guys that they picked for Roman Reigns to fight didn't want us to get engaged that much. Like against Triple H and The Undertaker, like we kind of knew he was going to win and was just trying to put him over with legitimacy. And two times against Brock and 32 in particular, I really felt like, man, you didn't want to go Dean Ambrose versus Roman Reigns or anything of that sort. And it just, everything that they've done with Roman Reigns, unfortunately, just has not clicked. And it's at the point now with him that they force feed him so much without the belt that I almost prefer it when he has it, because he's so involved in every main part of the storyline that at least put the strap on him so that feels legitimate. And now it's like he's not in the title picture, so we're not pushing him. But to your point, we really know he is, and it just devalues whatever world title is on the show that he is. And it's really too bad for the guy and the wrestler, because he does seem like a fantastic guy and he's A+ in the ring, but it's just been set up for failure ever since he split from the Shield.
And all of this, I can't believe I say this so many times, all of this could have been avoided if they just said, turn him effing heel. just let the fans get out their hatred for him for, I don't know, 6 months, 8 months, and let them just vent, and he could vent back, of which I'm sure he has a lot of built-up frustration, not just against management, but against the fans' reaction. I feel like he'd be more natural. He wouldn't have to worry so much about his promos. He could just cut them from the hip because there's a lot there, and they would have had the chance to hate him only to learn to love him. Every top babyface has had this ever. And Roman Reigns has just got this bubble of immunity around him, of which Vince McMahon says, nope, nope, anybody but Roman. Nobody's turning him heel. If the fans are just going to have to deal with it. It's a bunch of nonsense of why they haven't turned him heel. And you could say, well, if they turned him heel, the fans would cheer for him. I don't think that would be the case with Roman Reigns. I really don't think so, because I think he is tailor-made to be a heel, because he just has the mannerisms. He acts like he's the coolest guy at school. He's like that, you know, the top, you know, football player on the team that walks around like he's just got, you know, the swagger. He's, you know, he's the guy that everyone wants to be and all the girls want to be with, kind of vibe to him that he just naturally has. And that's great for a heel, but not great for a babyface. There's just so many things that I could go on and on, but I won't, because I'll pause as we get to this Roman Reigns Ziggler match. But any final thoughts on this?
Not without going down a Roman heel. Yeah. Roman Reigns rabbit hole.
It's a massive rabbit hole, so I'm going to stop. But, okay, so we get Roman Reigns and Ziggler. Again, Ziggler is, I mean, this guy is another one of, he's kind of like a, I don't know, Luke Harper, in which he just never felt like he got utilized correctly or maximized, per se. But, you know, we had Roman Reigns win this. As you did you expect anything else? I didn't. Ziggler, again, makes him look like $1 million. And Roman Reigns wins. But it's not really about the match, because after this, Corbin vowed to humiliate Roman Reigns as he was on his, I don't know what you'd call it, his throne as the local wrestlers, as well, they were really labeled as what, his minions or commoners or I don't know, some part of his royal team that were holding him up on his perch. And then he gets down and they all end up, after many attempts, as Roman Reigns, I thought, was going to fight out of it, as he's manhandled 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 guys. Eventually the numbers game catches up. He's handcuffed to the ring post and they are just mashing him with dog food. What did you think about all this as SmackDown went off the air?
Well, the match was great. Him and Dolph put on an A+ match. The finish was as expected, to your point. You know, it was not expected, because I did not expect dog food to come out, but I mean, like, it was kind of coming that Baron Corbin would get the best of him, because it seemed like it had gone the other way for a number of weeks going back to Survivor Series. I don't mind it. I like Baron Corbin right now. I feel like he's coming into his own as this particular character. Dolph Ziggler as his henchman. Hey, if it takes it that to get Dolph Ziggler on regular television, I'm okay with it. I mean, like, it could be worse. Aside from the fact that I don't think it should have been closing out SmackDown, I don't see too much wrong with this particular segment.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little bit hokey, and you know, the couple of weeks ago when Baron Corbin comes out and talks about doggy poopy bags or something, it reminded me a lot of, like, Tater Tots and just some other bad writing. It brought up a lot of bad memory in terms of promos, but I'm fine with Corbin doing this, and the reason is, and this is why I said at the top of the show that I actually have some good things to say about this segment, as hokey as it was that they, you know, put dog food on him because he's the big dog, of which, don't even get me started on that forced nickname that still, 4 years later, feels nowhere near like the right nickname for him. excuse me. So, the good thing is that I think Baron Corbin needed some heat here, as you said. Baron Corbin needed something to get the fans to want to see him get his ass kicked again, because we've seen him lose how many times to Roman Reigns, and Roman Reigns getting the best of him, even when the odds are not in his favor in terms of numbers. So this was a good way to get Roman Reigns fired up as a babyface, as you now want to see him beat up Baron Corbin. I'm feeling mostly generally what WWE is trying to make me feel of, you have a little bit of sympathy for Reigns and that you want to see him get revenge now. That's the idea. And now I think they've done that. And we have Baron Corbin, who I think needed the heat, got the heat. And that's the benefit of this. And it wasn't the worst thing in the world. It's not all about putting smiles on people's faces. And they had that example here. I'm fine with SmackDown ending on a, quote, down note once in a while rather than having Roman Reigns celebrate in the ring every single time the show goes off the air.
Yeah, you know, and it's nice because I've been a big Baron Corbin fan ever since he came up. Obviously, when he started on SmackDown in 2016 and that rendition of the brand split, he was more that biker gimmick with the long hair. And then he won the Money in the Bank briefcase that apparently had a falling out backstage, had taken away or failed to cash in. And they really pumped the brakes on his, it seemed like a push at the time. He went to Raw, the whole assistant GM thing. I think it kind of fell flat and ran its course. But now he seems to be on a good path for him. And I like that they're utilizing him. And I think that he needed this heat and get people to take him seriously again. And for all like all of his bragging and whatnot. So it was hokey. It could have been worse. And he's a guy that is a good matchup for Roman Reigns because he's one of those heels that like literally nobody likes. Like there are some heels like Drew McIntyre or obviously Bray Wyatt or Brock Lesnar where like there's a small portion of the fan base that gets behind them and will cheer for them over the babyface they're facing. Baron Corbin has a nobody who will cheer for him. And even a guy like me who likes him, I don't cheer for him in the moment. I just really like him as a wrestler and a character. So I think it's really good that Roman Reigns is up against a guy who no cheer.
I think I lost you there. You there? I think I lost you. Oh, can you hear me?
Hey, hello?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, sorry. I think my... Yeah, I got you.
Okay. No problem. So you were saying that Roman Reigns is a good pairing because really Baron Corbin is the perfect foil for that because he's completely unlikable. He's not one of those cool heels.
Yeah, exactly. So like... there's not a lot of heels that have no backing whatsoever. Like Drew McIntyre gets a lot of backing. Brock does. Randy does when he's a heel. Obviously The Fiend. And Baron's a guy that no matter like how far they go with him, he gets like zero backing and people legitimately get on him and want him to get his ass kicked. And even a guy like myself who really likes Baron Corbin in the moment will never ever cheer for him.
No, I won't either. But yet I enjoy how he's developing, and one way to develop them is to show that they have no redeeming qualities, and Baron Corbin is starting to show that he has no redeeming qualities, and that's a compliment. I'm not saying that he's a terrible wrestling character. He is a guy that is showing you that he will cheat to win, that he has minions that will do his work, that he's really playing in a fantasy land, that he's a king, and everyone knows he's not an actual king, and really using the King of the Ring win as a launching pad, as we hope that the King of the Ring win would be. And I think he's taken to it better than I even expected. He's unlikable in his look. He's unlikable in the way he talks. He's just starting to develop, I think, a very good foundation for what could be a long run as a top heel. And clearly Vince McMahon loves him as well, the way he's been positioned over the last month, 2 months, 3 months.
Yeah, and it's nice to see because we talked on the last show that it seemed like they were constantly recycling the same set of five or six guys. And obviously it's different when they're bringing up a new heel. But Baron Corbin's a guy that seemed on more than one occasion he was going to get thrown by the wayside. But he's excellent in the ring. I feel his promo skills have come a very long way. He's completely reinvented his character since he originally debuted in 2016 when he had the long hair and had kind of a biker look going on. And it's just really good to see that they're putting, you know, a lot of faith and, you know, like confidence in Baron Corbin to go toe-to-toe with clearly the top babyface in the company right now in Roman Reigns. And I think we all know that ultimately Reigns will get the best of him. And as we talked about on Wednesday, we'll probably go on to win the Royal Rumble and main event WrestleMania for the fifth time in the last 6 years. But in the meantime, in the short term, it's nice to see Baron Corbin gaining legitimacy through this angle.
It is, and I'm on board for this. I'm hopeful that Baron Corbin gets the best of Roman for the next, I mean, however many weeks. I know that TLC is next week, but Baron Corbin needs sustained heat. He needs to build the heat week after week after week to make the fans want to see him get his ass kicked rather than just blowing the heat off after 1 week. Oh, he gets speared and there's the win. I mean, the WWE is guilty of that over how, you know, not just in this program, but really in programs across the board where they don't allow heat to build. And I want building heat where you just get more angry every single week because, oh, well, it's not about, it's, we're putting smiles on people's faces, but you know how you put a smile on people's faces? By making the guy that you now absolutely hate and have, he's gotten the best of the good guys for weeks and weeks and maybe months, that he finally gets his ass kicked and you see the babyface, you know, triumph. That is a good story typically. So that's what I would love to see. I'm a guy that loves to see heat build because it just, it gives you that, like, you get so frustrated, but you're feeling emotion. That means you're emotionally invested in the story. So, well, very good. Was there anything else about SmackDown that maybe we didn't cover you wanted to touch on?
Well, not so much about SmackDown, but a quick thing. I heard you touch on, like, the whole interview with Austin and The Undertaker. And I wanted to ask you, because it caught my attention, that Undertaker kind of touched on the fact that pretty much since his WrestleMania 28 match with Triple H, year to year, he's been thinking that it's the end, especially in Orlando at WrestleMania 33, which you were at. And I want to ask you, like, do you think, because he mentioned, like, I didn't want to be that guy who stayed too long. Do you think that they've gone too far with The Undertaker? And do you think it's hurt his character in the last, let's say, 6 or 7 years by persisting with him coming back and returning?
Yes. I mean, there's no question about it. I mean, that was the one thing what Undertaker said when he said that, look, you know, I don't want to be one of those guys that overstays his welcome and is here too long. And I'm thinking, you kind of already did that. And I'm a huge Undertaker fan. I have nothing but praise to say about his promos. His character was, to me, I mean, outside of Stone Cold Steve Austin, this guy was the number one guy for me. I mean, there is nothing bad that I can say about Mark Calloway, The Undertaker, even the American Badass that many people didn't like. I liked it. I just think that, yes, he has kind of tainted his career a little bit. He's still a First Battle Hall of Famer. You could still make a case for him the greatest of all time. But there are many cases in which after the match you go, it's just time. I don't want to see this version of The Undertaker. How many times have we said that over the last 5 years? I just don't want to see this version. I don't want to think about The Undertaker in a different way than when he was what I remember him as. And I'll still watch his matches, but I don't watch his matches thinking, this is going to be a great match. I watch it thinking, I don't want him to die. I mean, that's the way I look at his matches now. Because, I mean, look at Goldberg. And Goldberg is absolutely at fault. But even Roman Reigns, that match at 33 was not a match that you would say was, I mean, some of the spots were not on Roman. It was Undertaker who, you know, is just, he's, let's face it, Father Time has caught up with him. There were spots that he botched because of his age and his lack of muscle ability, lack of strength that happens. And, you know, I just don't want to think of Undertaker matches as that. I want to look at them and go, this is going to be awesome, you know? So, yes, has it hurt his career a little? I think so. And has he overstayed his welcome? I think he has. But I'll still watch.
Yeah, I'm with you there, too, because, you know, like, my girlfriend only started watching wrestling over the last year and a half when she started dating me. I kind of turned her to the dark side. But, you know, in the handful of times she's seen Undertaker, she's just like, okay, why is this old guy fighting? And then I've shown her old matches, and she's like, oh, my God, like, he used to be a legitimate badass. And it's tough watching him now. I roll my eyes when he comes out, because I'm just like, it's not the same guy, and it's through no fault of his own. But, you know, I have a buddy who grew up with me, and we watched the Ruthless Aggression era, like, side by side. And he kind of phased out in 2008 and never looked back. And now he tunes in maybe once a year during WrestleMania season. And he's just like, dude, it's tragic watching The Undertaker. And he always often refers to the 33 match that you talked about just now with Roman Reigns, where the end of the match where Roman Reigns bounces off the ropes a few times and Undertaker literally looks confused by Roman Reigns going off the ropes one too many times and then hits him with the spear. And it's just like, even in that interview with Steve Austin, I found it kind of ironic how, you know, they were talking about Undertaker, and then Undertaker said to Steve Austin, like, yeah, you know, maybe you could have gone a few more years if you hadn't had your health problems. And Steve Austin touched on it as well, but I was just like, no, Steve Austin went out on top. The Rock went out on top. Triple H, you know, he wrestles every once in a while, but even when he does, he isn't broken down like the Undertaker. Shawn Michaels, they talk about Shawn Michaels too, except for that one match he came back for at Crown Jewel or whatever it was last year. But Undertaker just seems like that one guy that for no matter the reason, whenever you think it's done, which has been that way pretty much since WrestleMania 30, you think he may be done and he just comes back, and I just don't understand why they're insisting with it.
I don't know. I feel like this could be a whole nother podcast. I mean, this is also a huge rabbit hole. They're insistent on it because I think it's Mark Calloway who's insistent on it. I think Vince McMahon's never going to say no to Mark. I mean, he's not. I mean, the contributions he's made to this business are immeasurable. And if Undertaker feels he can go, then he can go. And Vince will find an opponent that, you know, can fit to the gravitas of the Undertaker being an opponent for the Undertaker. And I just don't think that Undertaker should be in a ring right now. Do I think he should be a general manager? Hell no. Do I think he should be maybe kind of a performance center instructor as Michaels has? Absolutely. I think he'd fit that role very well. As an agent, he'd fit very well. I don't need to see this, because every time I see it, it takes a piece of the Undertaker's allure away from it. And I love his entrance. We all do. But once he starts hitting the ropes, it's, you know, half the speed. His timing's off. You're worried he's actually going to get hurt. I mean, that's how I view these matches, and I don't want to think like that. I want to think about it like the Undertaker of 2000, and it's not realistic because it's 20 years later. But mark my words, they will get to Survivor Series next year, so they get to that nice round 30, and maybe he retires there, or my prediction is the WrestleMania 37, as maybe the opponent is revealed at Survivor Series next year, and then the final match will be announced at WrestleMania 37. But I mean, hey, that again, this is a rabbit hole that is very deep and very long.
Yeah, that's accurate. We could go all night with this, and I guess I just wanted to bring it up because it caught my attention when I was watching that podcast earlier this week.
No, I'm glad you brought it up. And that interview with Austin was probably one of the better ones Austin's done. I was a big fan of the format. You know, I do love the Stone Cold podcast, but also now that he has these Stone Cold sessions, Broken Skull sessions, I love that as well. This week, ironically, is also going to be, I think it's this week, or his next guest, whenever that is going to be Goldberg. So that should be an interesting conversation as well. I'm sure he'll, and I hope he does, bring up the Saudi Arabia match with Undertaker, or maybe he was instructed not to, I don't know, as it's on the WWE Network, but who knows. So that'll be interesting. So Anthony, as always, it's been awesome. We always run over a little bit, but it's always with good conversation and good reason. And I am looking forward to our next encounter, which, as I'm trying to do the math here, it'll put us at, let's see, so over this Saturday, it'll be a few days before you'll be my last guest before the new year on the 29th of December. So I'm looking forward to that, as we will officially at that point be running into the Royal Rumble season.
Yeah, I'm going to be looking forward to it. It's crazy that it's already this time of year again, but I think it's the best time for wrestling throughout the whole year, so it's going to be really interesting to get back on the show right around then.
I can't wait, and this is where the non-wrestling fans who think wrestling's stupid until it comes to Rumble WrestleMania season start to kind of peer their head in the window and go, what's going on here? You know, it's Rumble season. You know, that's when the quote, you know, true fans come back, or whatever they label themselves as, and start to peer in the window for WrestleMania season. But we'll still be here, and I'm looking forward to it. But before we go, let everyone know how they can find you on social media.
You can find me on Twitter at AdamMarco25, and I always brief everyone, you better like hockey, because that is 95% about what I tweet about.
I love that disclaimer every time you say that, but it's true, because you think, oh, he's on a wrestling podcast, it's all going to be about wrestling, and I'm like, no, that's actually not true. It is mostly about hockey, but if you're a hockey fan, you will enjoy the tweets, and you're up to interacting, of course, with anybody that's also interested in hockey, so.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, Americans aren't big on hockey down there, but, you know, my favorite team is an American team, so often I get into it with a lot of Americans.
All right. Well, we are here and waiting for you. So, I mean, yeah. All right. Well, Anthony, thank you so much for joining me, and we will catch you down the road in just a few weeks.
All right, Matt. Talk soon.
All right. Take care.